Had class last week. Today we're going to look at work is a holy calling. Skilled, dependable workers who are true to God's ways often find their work overflowing their job description. In the face of ever-expanding responsibility, Samuel's response is, "Not, that's not my job." Instead, he sees the crucial need in front of him, recognizes that he has the capacity to lead them, and steps in to resolve them. As he does so, God increases his authority. I was at a conference at our home office last week, and there's a couple of guys here because Thursday. Very northern reaches of Washington State. I got pictures of an island that came. So I was there with our COO, and he's in front of it. Anyway, he believes in the robots. Anyway, but we were just talking, and he kind of brought up the fact that there was. And what we're shooting for is, so my company, my organism, we hired disabled folks that would not necessarily be able to find a job out in the industry. That's what we do. We hire them because we know that they have capability that either they don't, that people don't realize, or that they have. That's what we do. We hired them. A lot of them are disabled. 75% of our disabled veterans are very disabled. Whereas, there's different levels of that ability that we have, and we're very popular in that. Very top of it, we want to employ at least 15% of the very top group that, the Gary movement. We want to 15% of the people, that's the part of the people that we hire, we want to be Gary. So, there's some guys. And they're like, oh, the transportation. And it's amazing. My thought process. This is what I look at. It's amazing my thought process and how I look at stuff. The job compared to those guys. Just saying those people. He's responsible for God having whatever. We're gonna see that. Samuel's response is not, that's not my job. He sees the crucial need in front of him, recognizes that he has the capacity to meet them, and steps in to resolve them. He does so, God increases his authority and effectiveness and that's willing. One lesson we might take from this is to respond to God with a willingness to serve and standing. Do you see opportunities in front of you to work? Your supervisors or colleagues seem to expect you to take further responsibility in areas that aren't formally part of your job. That happens. These are often growth, development, and advancement. Unless your supervisors do not appreciate your taking on what would it take for you to step forward in these opportunities? Similarly, you may see needs around you that you can help meet if you have the trust and courage to respond. What would it take to develop your trust in God and receive the courage and the power of the leader? So, similarly, you may see needs around you that could help meet, that you can help meet if you had the trust and courage to respond. This is extremely minimal, what I'm about to say. I liken that to a piece of trash that you walk by or a step going up your arm. Pick it up. You walk by it, it's yours. You walk by something in this church that needs to be cleaned up, trash taken out, no matter what it is. You walk by it, leave it there, it's yours. Hey, I'm guilty. I'm the first one there. You walk by something, whether it's here, or at work, or whatever. Final account, Samuel's governance, 1 Samuel 7, 15-17 says that he went on a circuit of the cities of Israel year by year to the cities of Israel. Year by year to the cities of Israel, governing and administering justice. The chapter closes with, let's read it, 1 Samuel 7, 15-17. Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. He went from year to year and served at Bethel, Gilgal, and Mizpah, and judged Israel in all his places. His return was to Ramah, but there was his house, and there he judged Israel, and there he built the temple of the Lord. His civic and military services in Israel were founded on his lifelong faithfulness and worship of the Lord. Now we're going to look at Samuel's son's disappointment. 1 Samuel 8, 1-3. It came to pass, Samuel was old, and he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after the ruler, and took bribes and perverted judgment. And all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel and said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. But the king disputed Samuel when they said, Make us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. So what do we see? The judges. Judges are begging for a king. Basically, like, you're not ready for the king of the century. Samuel's got a problem with looking for a king because they're not ready for the king. Who's that king? And the Lord said unto Samuel, Hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. According to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day. Wherewith God said, I brought them out of Egypt. Serpent point. Wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. Now therefore, hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him. And he said, This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariot, to be his horsemen. Some shall run before his chariot. He will appoint him captains over 1,000 and captains over 50, and will set them to ear his ground, and to reap his harvest, and to make his instruments of war, and to instruments of his chariot. And he will take your daughters to be confectionary, and to be cooks, and he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servant. He will take the tenth of your seed and your vineyard and give it to his officers and to his servants. He will take your men servants and your maidservants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your sheep, and ye shall be his servant. And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king, which he shall have chosen, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. They said, nay, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us, and go out before us and fight our battles. And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, hearken unto their voices, and make them a king. And Samuel said unto the men of Israel, go ye every man unto his city. What does that sound like? That government that Samuel's describing right here, what does that sound like? Not straight up socialism. Not communism. But socialism leads to communism. Fascism starts it all. That's straight up socialism. Samuel's saying, you want a king? That king is going to make you subservient to everything that you have in the state. Like I said, we're not there yet. Yeah, absolutely. And God says that before. And they haven't turned on you, they've turned on me. As Samuel ages, he repeats Eli's error and appoints his own sons to succeed him. Eli's sons, they turn out to be greedy and corrupt. Disappointing sons of great leaders is a recurrent theme in Samuel and Kings. Tragedy of David's son. David's son Absalom occupied the bulk of 2 Samuel chapter 13-19. It reminds us that the work of parenting is as challenging as every other occupation, but far more emotionally intense. No solution is yet so my son. He waits till his dad's out of town to tell him. He is second-guessing the veterinarian thing because he doesn't feel like he needs to learn about animals. What goes in is what comes out, right? So it would make sense that it's important to understand what's being done, correct? Okay. I had a conversation with him. I'm trying as hard as I can not to, like, form the words, listen, man. Listen to what I'm telling. Because you have to learn the little thing to understand the big thing. If I didn't know anything about math, and I'm an engineer by trade, okay? If I didn't know anything about math, I couldn't do that. I couldn't sit there and design buildings. I couldn't sit there and do that. I don't know anything about math. I didn't know anything about physics. I couldn't do that. If an accountant doesn't know how to subtract, multiply, he can't be your accountant. Right? Does that make sense? You don't go through first and sixth grade. Right? Maybe it's because he's homeschooled. I don't know. Reminds us that parenting is as challenging as every other occupation, but far more emotionally intense. The solution is given in the text. But we can observe that Eli, Samuel, and David seem to have given their troubled children many privileges, but little paternal involvement. Maybe that's where I'm falling short. That's completely possible. Yet we also know that even the most dedicated parents may face the heartbreak of children. Rather than laying blame for stereotyping causes, let us simply note that parenting children is an occupation requiring as much prayer, skill, community support, good fortune, and love as any other, if not more. Ultimately, to be a parent, whether our children bring delight, disappointment, or some of both, is to depend on God's grace and mercy and to hope for a redemption beyond what we see during our lifetime. Perhaps our deepest comfort is to remember that God also experienced a parent's heartbreak for his son. and overthrew all through the power of love. So the Israelites asked for a king. This is 1 Samuel 8:4-22. Just read. Seeing the unsuitability of Samuel's sons, the Israelites asked him to appoint for us and a king to govern us like other nations. This request displeases Samuel. Samuel warned the people that kings lay heavy burdens on the nation. These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to the chariot. In fact, the kings would be so rapacious that eventually the people would cry out to God to save them from the king. That's why I say we're not there yet. God agrees that asking for a king is a bad idea because it amounts to a rejection of God himself. Say we're going that way. Anybody heard about the fight in the Supreme Court? Anybody heard about it? All right. So, Daniel Leo says, basically, in a long drawn out comment, he basically said, you don't have immunity for President Trump. You don't have immunity for President Trump, you got to drop immunity. I was done. Whatever Obama was doing, working, so on and so forth. Anyway, Daniel Leo seems to be the voice of reason. What I read yesterday is correct. Michelle, I'd say that this country is horribly sore. And I believe our founding document, I would say, this country found it beautiful. Given to us inalienable rights. Okay. I agree with you. There you go. But the end of the term, basically said, hey, earthquakes are better. Before the rapture, as far before the greater than the only one. And the more this country of the world, I used to argue. They're bombing it. It looks great. Over here in Hope Mills, they're going with the club and partying in the malls. But I have a hard time understanding why. That's all they do is care about. You know, there's a little money for you. As long as this country comes to God, and this looks less than you are. Keep praying. praying for our leadership. Pray for President Biden. Pray for all those ground Congress. Pray that they can say, pray that they realize that God agrees that asking for a king is a bad idea because it amounts to the rejection of God himself, the king. Nonetheless, the Lord decides to allow the people to choose their form of government. And to listen to the wicked. But they say to you, they have not rejected you. Biblical scholar John Goldingay said, notes, God starts with his people where they are. Not cope with him with his highest way. He carves out a lower way. Do not respond to the spirit of Yahweh. For all sorts of spirits lead them into anarchy. He provides the institutional system. Sometimes God permits institutions that are not part of his eternal purpose. And the monarch of Israel is one of the most glaring examples. Basically, God puts it in the power of who you are. Question yourself and say, if you question that and say, how could you put somebody in your mind? Think how. Do we not see how easy, how great it is on the other side of that? Somebody like, I'll take some. I don't know. That will come from talk trash. Both God and Samuel showed great humility, resilience, and grace in allowing Israel to make choices and mistakes, learning from the consequences. There are many institutional and workplace situations where leadership must adjust to people's choices, yet at the same time try to provide opportunities for growth and grace. Samuel's warning to Israel could easily serve as a warning to nations, businesses, churches, schools, and other organizations of today's world. In our following world, people use power. We have to adjust while at the same time doing what we can to change for them. Our aspiration is to love God and treat other people as God commands in the law given to Moses, which God's people have had an extremely hard time doing every day. Saul chosen as Israel's first king. So the task of choosing a king, 1 Samuel 9 through 16. So Saul chosen as Israel's first king. God's first choice to be king is Saul. Someone who looked the part, literally stood head and shoulders above everyone else. So go to 1 Samuel 9. Now there was a man of Benjamin named Kish, the son of son of Zeror, the son of Becheron, the son of Ephiah, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. He had a son who was Saul. A choice young man, and there was not among the children of Israel a good person to eat, from his shoulder and upward, higher than any of the people. And the asses of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to Saul and his son, take now one of the servants of Israel, and arise, go seek the asses. That was it. First of all, I landed in Minneapolis Friday morning. Got off the plane, walked out the gate. I've never seen a Cinnabon in an airport. Hey. Anyway, I'm standing there and I'm waiting for a lady to come in the door. Turn around. And there's a food stand. I'm like, how hard are you? And he passed through Mount Ephraim and passed through the land. I don't know how somebody like that could hold that little thing. Because all it dealt, so Delta flies, and the Delta wing in Minneapolis, and they just fly small jets in there to go through. Those are little plates. And he passed through Mount Ephraim and passed through the land of Shalisha, but they found them not. Then they passed through the land of Shalem. He's looking for his dead bone. And there they were not. They passed through the land of Benjamin. And when they were come to the land of Zuf, Saul said to his servant that was with him, "Come and let us return, lest my father be caring for the asses, and take thought for us." And he said unto him, "Behold, now there is in this city a man of God, and he is an honorable man. All that he saith cometh surely to pass. Now let us go thither. Peradventure he can show us our way that we should go." Then said Saul to his servant, "But behold, if we go, what shall we bring the men? The rest spent in our vessels, and there is not a present to bring to the man of God. What have we?" And the servant answered Saul again and said, "I have here at hand the fourth part of a shekel of silver. That will I give to the man to tell us our way." Before time in Israel, a man went to inquire of God. Thus he spake, "Come and let us go to the seer. For he that is now called a prophet was before God for a seer." Then said Saul to his servant, "Well said, come, let us go." So they went unto the city where the man got. And as they went up the hill to the city, they found young maidens going out to draw water. And said unto them, "Is the seer?" And they answered them and said, "He is. Behold, he is before you. Make haste now, for you came today to the city, for there is a sacrifice of the people to the day in a high place. As soon as ye become into the city, ye shall straightway find him before he go up to the high place to eat. For the people will not eat until he come, because he doth bless the sacrifice, and afterwards they eat that be bidden. Now therefore get you up, for about this time ye shall find him." They went up into the city. When they were come into the city, behold, Samuel came out against them for to go up to the high place. Now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear a day before Saul came, saying, Tomorrow, about this time, I will send thee a man out of the land of Benjamin, and thou shalt anoint him to be captain over my people Israel, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. I have looked upon my people because their cry has come unto me." And when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said unto him, "Behold, the man whom I spake to thee of, this same shall reign over my people." And Saul drew near to Samuel at the gate and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, where the seer's house is." Samuel answered Saul and said, "I am the seer. Go up before me into the high place, for ye shall eat with me this day. With me today. And tomorrow I will let thee go, and will tell thee all that is in thine heart. As for thine," Saul hasn't said anything to Samuel about his dad's donkey. "And as for thine asses that were lost 3 days ago, set not thy mind on them, for they are found, and on whom is all the desire of Israel? Is it not on thee and on all thy father's house?" That should erase any thought of Saul not believing in Samuel. Saul answered and said, I am not a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin. Wherefore then speakest thou so to me?" And Samuel took Saul and his servant, brought them into the parlor, and made them sit in the chiefest place among them that were bidden, which were about 30 persons. Samuel said unto the cook, "Bring the portion which I gave thee, of which I sent unto thee, set it by thee." And the cook took up the shoulder, and that which was upon it, and set it before Saul. Samuel said, "Behold, that which is left, set it before thee, and eat. For unto this time hath it been kept for thee, since I said, I have invited thee people." Saul did eat with Samuel then. When they were come down from the high place in the city, Samuel commanded Saul upon the top of the house. And they arose early and came to pass about the spring of the day. And Samuel called Saul from the top of the house, saying, "Up, that I may send thee away." And Saul arose, and they went out, both of them, he and Samuel, abroad. And as they were going down to the end of the city, Samuel said to Saul, "Bid the servant pass on before us." And he passed on. "Stand thou still a while, that I may show thee the word of God." God's first choice to be king is Saul. Someone who looked the part, literally stood head and shoulders above everyone else. Furthermore, he won military victories, the main reason for having a king in the first book. We're going to see that. In the beginning, he served faithfully, but he quickly became disobedient to God and arrogant with his people. We'll see that in Samuel 13. 1 Samuel 13. Both Samuel and God became exasperated with him and began to look for his replacement. But before we measure Saul's actions against 21st century leadership, we should note that Saul simply did what kings did in the ancient Near East. The people got what they asked for, and what Samuel had warned them, a militaristic, charismatic, self-aggrandizing tyrant. How are we to evaluate Israel's first king? Did God make a mistake in leading Samuel to anoint young Saul as king? No. Was the choice of Saul an object lesson to the Israelites not to be seduced by outward appearances, handsome on the outside, but hollow on the inside? And asking for a king, the Israelites showed their lack of faith in God. The king they received ultimately demonstrated that same lack of faith in God. Saul's primary task as king was to assure securities for the Israelites from attack by the neighboring Philistines and other nations. But when faced with Goliath, Saul's fear overcame his faith and he proved unequal to his role. Throughout his reign, Saul similarly doubted God, seeking counsel in the wrong places, and finally dying a suicide as his army was routed by the enemy. So what did God show us through Saul? What not to do? Flat out. Let's go real quick to 1 Samuel 11. Specifically, 1 Samuel 11, 1 through 14. And Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh Gilead. And all the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us, and he will serve thee. And Nahash the Ammonite answered him, on this condition will I make a covenant with you, and I will thrust out all your right eyes and lay it for reproach upon it. And the elders of David, you know what? Let's read 1 Samuel 10, and then we'll go into 11. There's a gap in my legacy. Then Samuel took a vial of oil and poured it upon his head. Saul said, kissed him and said, is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? When thou art departing from me today, then thou shalt find two men by Rachel's sepulchre in the border of Benjamin and Zelzah. And they will say unto thee, the asses which thou wentest to seek are found. And lo, thy father hath left the care of the asses and sorroweth for you, saying, what shall I do for my son? Then shalt thou go on forward from thence, and thou shalt come to the plain of Tabor, and there shalt meet thee three men going up to God, in the south, one carrying three kids, not his kids. And another carrying three loaves of bread, and another carrying a bottle of wine. They will salute thee, and give thee two loaves of bread, which thou shalt receive of their hand. After that, thou shalt come to the hill of God, where is the garrison of Philistines. And that shall come to pass, when thou art come thither to the city, that thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place with a psaltery, a tabret, a pipe, a harp before them, and they shall prophesy. Psaltery. The Spirit of the Lord, they were basically men. The Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shalt be turned into another man. And let it be, but what else have we heard? Let it be when these signs are come unto thee, that thou do as occasion serve thee, for God is with thee. And thou shalt go down before me to Gilgal. And behold, I will come down unto thee to offer burnt offerings and sacrificing peace offering. 7 days shalt thou tarry, till I come to thee and show thee what thou shalt do. And it was so that when he turned back to go from sin, God gave him another heart, and all those signs came to pass that day. When they came thither to the hill, behold, a company of prophets with him. The Spirit of God came upon him, and he prophesied among them. It came to pass, when all that knew him before time saw that, behold, he prophesied among the prophets, and the people said one to another, what is this that is come unto the son of Kish? Is Saul same place answered and said, who is their father? Therefore it became a proverb. Is Saul also among the prophets? And when he had made an end of prophesying, he came to the high place. Saul's uncle Saul said unto him and to his servant, whither went he? And he said, to gas is what he saw, that they were nowhere. He came to stand with him. Saul and Saul said unto his uncle, he told us plainly that the asses were found in the matter of the kingdom, whereof Samuel spake, he told them not. Samuel called the people together unto the Lord to give them, and said unto the children of Israel, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought up Israel out of Egypt, and delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians, out of the hand of all kingdom, and of them that oppressed you. God saying, I delivered you out of the hands of the Egyptians and all the kingdoms, those that oppressed you. I can't imagine, I have to imagine, God's looking at that and you're begging for a king. You're begging to come with you. And ye have this day rejected your God, who himself saved you out of all your adversity and your tribulation, and you have set up in him, nay, but set a king over us. Now therefore present yourself before the Lord by your tribe and by your thousand. And Samuel had caused all the tribes of Israel to come near. The tribe of Benjamin was taken. When he had caused the tribe of Benjamin to come near by their families, the family of Machir was taken. Saul the son of Kish was taken. And when they sought him, he could not be found. Therefore they inquired of the Lord further, if the man should yet come thither. And the Lord answered, behold, he hath hid himself among the stuff. And they ran and fetched him thence. And when he stood among the people, he was higher than any of the people from his shoulders upward. Samuel said to all the people, see ye him whom the Lord hath chosen, that there is none like him among all the people. And all the people shouted and said, God save the king. Then Samuel told the people the manner of the kingdom, and wrote it in a book, and laid it up before the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house. And Saul also went home to Gibeah, and there went in a band of men whose heart God had touched. The children of Belial said, how shall this man save us? And they despised him, and brought him no presents, but held his. Samuel, first thing I learned. Then Nahash the Ammonite came up and camped against Jabesh Gilead. All the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us, and we will serve thee. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, on this condition will I make a covenant with you. I may thrust out all your right eyes and lay for a reproach upon all of you. And the elders of Jabesh said unto him, give us 7 days' respite, that we may send messengers unto all the coasts of Israel, and then, if there be no man to save us, we will come out of these. So, Ammonite comes up and he says, all right, the Israelites come up. What must we do to be saved? Ammonite says, let me cut out all your right eyes. The Israelites say, let me send some messengers out and make sure I don't have anybody that can kill you. Then And the elders of David said unto him, give us 7 days respite, that we may send messengers unto all the coasts of Israel. And then, if you don't mind to save us, we will come out to thee. Then came the messengers to Gibeah of Saul and told the tidings in the ears of the people, and all the people lifted up their voices and wept. Old Saul came after the herd out of the field, and Saul said, what aileth the people that they weep? And they told him the tidings of the men of Jabesh. And the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard those tidings, and his anger was kindled greatly. And he took a yoke of oxen, and hewed them in pieces, and sent them throughout all the coasts of Israel by the hands of the messengers, saying, whosoever cometh not forth after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done unto his ox. And so he basically takes his herd of oxen and cuts them off. He said, if you guys don't come to fight with me, I'm going to do the same thing. So shall it be done unto his ox. And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent. When he numbered them in Bezek, the children of Israel were 300,000, and the men of Judah 30,000. They said unto the messengers that came, thus shall ye say unto the men of Jabesh Gilead, tomorrow, by that time the sun be hot, ye shall have help. And the messengers came and showed it to the men of Jabesh, and they were glad. Therefore the men of Jabesh said, tomorrow we will come out unto you, and ye shall do with us all that seemeth good unto your sanity. And it was so on the morrow that Saul put the people in three companies, and they came into the midst of the host in the morning watch, and slew the Ammonites until the heat of the day. And it came to pass that they which remained were scattered, so that two of them were not left together. And the people said unto Samuel, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men, that we may put them to death. And Saul said, there shall not be a man put to death this day, for today the Lord hath brought salvation in Israel. Then said Samuel to the people, come and let us go to Gilgal, kingdom. And all the people went to Gilgal, and there they said they made Saul king before the Lord of Gilgal. And there they sacrificed sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord. And there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. So we see that Saul was a great military man. So let's go to and he tarried 7 days according to set time, the same little point, the same little came not to Gilgal. And the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to the meat, a peace offering, and he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of the offering, the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, and he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, because the people were scattered from me, that thou camest not within the gate of the woman, and that Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore said I, Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself thereof and offered my offering. Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the command of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee, for now will the Lord have established a kingdom upon Israel. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. And Samuel arose and gat him up Gilgal unto Gibeah of Benjamin, and Saul numbered the people that were present with him about 600 men. We see Saul's arrogance. And we see where Samuel just flat out told Saul, you're being reproached. By a man with God, by a man after God. Alright, so let's look at 14, 24, 1 Samuel, 24-15. The men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food from the people that may be sent. So none of the people tasted any food. All day of the land came to the wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And the people were coming to the wood, behold, the honey dropped, and no man was there. oath. Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand, and dipped it in any honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Then answered one of the people and said, "Thy father straightly charged the people with the oath, saying, persecute a man that eateth any food in his day, and the people were faint." Then said, "My father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how my eyes have been enlightened because I tasted the word of his coming. How much more, if happily, the people had eaten freely today and despoiled their enemies which they fell, had there not been now a much greater slaughter among the Philistines?" We see more arrogance throughout the whole world. Next week, we'll read Second all of the letters from the Philistines, where David is served.